Welcome to Hype, episode 77. My name is Selena, and I am joined this week by Merima and Pam. Hello!
Hi!
Hey.
And the hype goes! Ooh! That's what it is. We never knew. It's been here all the time. We are hypeable.com's podcast, all about the latest entertainment news. And as usual, we'll get into the latest news from this week, and we'll talk about our favorite TV show of the week, and we'll talk about some of the great articles going up on Hypeable. But before any of that, as always, I just want to share the contact information with you. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. And as I find us via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. And a little note on the emails. Apparently, we've been getting a lot, but someone has been opening them, so I only just saw it yesterday. So we'll be talking about the emails later in the show. So if you've been feeling ignored, even though you've use the email, then I apologize, but we'll get to today. So very exciting times. I also just want to really quickly mention, if you're not following us on iTunes, then I highly suggest that you do that, not only because it actually helps us a little bit, but also because you don't miss any of the latest shows. And recently we've actually had some really great specials. We had a Mockingjay special, we had a Hamilton special, and this weekend we had a Buffy special in...
Woo woo.
And you were on it, Merima, and it was a lot of fun. And that was in preparation for the Buffy rewatch that's starting over on Hypeable's other podcast, Rewatchable, where they'll be going through all seven seasons, watching it with people that have never seen it before. So you can join even if you've never seen Buffy or if you're a super fan like we are. So that should be a lot of fun. This next coming week, we'll have a Star Wars special. I'm super excited. It should be a lot of fun. So subscribe to our YouTube, iTunes channel so you don't miss any of that stuff.
I have an issue for you with the Buffy special. You finished it with the Angel and Buffy shipping music.
Yep.
We had such a long conversation about how I'm like so anti all of the shipping, and then in the most passive aggressive move ever, Selena's like, well, I'm in charge, and just finishes it with
actually,
like the ultimate shipping music.
Believe it or not, that had nothing to do with you. That was
everything to do with me.
Actually, what I do, this is one of, as you know, as we talked about on Buffy, the Buffy special, I'm not a huge Buffy and Angel fan, but I felt like we'd been giving so much attention to Spike, the show, I felt bad. So I was like, well, nice. How can I like make it up? And I was like, well, let's end with a dose of feels. And I actually think that piece of music is amazing. Like, I love that piece of music. So I was like, well, let's end it like by reminding people that Buffy like tugs at your heartstrings. And it worked because we got lots of people saying like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Which was my intention. So
Christopher Beck is great. So there's a fun Easter egg if you haven't listened to it yet. You've got that to look forward to.
Yes, definitely. It was a lot of fun. So before we get into the news, we'll get into our How We Hype segment, which is where we'll tell you what we've been doing in fandom the past week. We'll start with Merima, whose number of stuff she's done worries me a little bit.
Okay, well, this week I read a lot of things. I read a lot of books because I wrote this article with like all of these little reviews of a whole lot of the celebrity memoirs and autobiographies that came out this year, because there's always like a huge wave of them right before the holidays and they can be fun presents. So I thought I'd do a fun little article about it. And because I had them all at my house, the problem being that I had not read many of them. So I had read a couple I think I've talked about before, like Why Not Me, which Selena and I both really enjoy. That was the Mindy Kaling book, and also the like behind the scenes book about Top Gear when I revealed my like weird passion for Top Gear and also Mythbusters on a previous episode of Hype. So those are definitely on the list, and they were really good. But there are other books by like Aziz Ansari. There's a Tyler Oakley book that I read that was at my house. Anyway, it was a weird experience. I wanted to give a shout out to, I guess, my favorite one. Well, my two favorites were Stan Lee has a memoir that came out this year, and it's a comic book. Like, it's written as a comic book. It's so cool. Mm-hmm. And it's called Amazing, Fantastic, Incredible, a Marvelous Memoir, because it's very punny. And it's just really fun, and I really liked it. I kind of thought, you know, it might be a bit, I don't know, twee, but if you're a comic book fan, like that could be a really fun gift for someone. I enjoyed that a lot. And it just looks really nice. You know, sometimes you get someone a book and it's like just not that exciting, but it's just really, really beautiful. And then the other one that I really loved that I read this week was this oral history of Clueless, which is not technically a memoir, but I included it anyway as like a present to me for writing the article. And it's so good. It's like a behind the scenes book about Clueless. Obviously came out 20 years ago this year. And they have interviews with all of the cast and the director and like everyone who worked on the film. And then they have all these interviews with people whose job it is to write academic articles about pop culture. It just sounds like the greatest job in the world. And it was really fun. So yeah, I read those and more, which you can see on hypebull.com, but I would definitely recommend those two for your life and, you know, maybe buy a second copy and like give it to someone also.
Great. That article, by the way, can be highly recommended because I checked it out. And I thought, you know, it's one of those things, I think it's one of those usual like group articles we do. And I was like, where are the names of the contributors? And I was like, holy crap, did Merma like write all of this? But I was like, of course you did, because it's you. So you probably did read all of those things.
Yeah, there was two that I didn't read that I haven't got to yet, which Michal and Christina wrote little blurbs for, helped me out with those. They're like the Shonda Rhimes book, which I've been meaning to read that, and the Felicia Day book as well, which Michal
gave
a rave review.
Yeah,
I haven't read that one yet.
That one is really good. I listened to the audiobook for that one, and definitely, I think I talked about it on Hype previous, that that's one worth getting on audiobook because she narrates herself. Cool, but yeah, definitely check that out. The holiday season is coming up. I'm sure you're all beginning to panic about presents, and that's a good article. And I read a book. I just read one book, like a normal person, so hello.
There's a lot in that book.
That's true. I picked up a book called Illuminae, which is...
by Amy Cowper and Jay Kristoff.
Yes, exactly. That's like a joint venture. Fantastic. It's a really interesting read, much different than I thought it was going to be, because it's, and I have to say, maybe ebook is not the right format for this particular book. Unfortunate. But
I don't even understand how that could have worked.
It's basically like this collection of memos and text conversations and pictures and information, like a dossier of like this event that took place on a space station. And it's like the events themselves are really exciting, but the ebook format was not. So I was like, because I kept having to like increase the text on my phone to see it, and the pictures were like not very good.
You read it on your phone?
Yeah.
Oh no.
I don't think I got the full experience of that book, but actually what I did want to say was I think the format of it was extremely exciting, and I think it's one of those books that, speak about getting a printed book, like this is one you should probably definitely get on print. I mean, I got the story. I got the point of it.
But that's only like half the experience.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I feel bad because I definitely talked Selena into this, but I didn't realize you were going to read on ebook. I would have mailed your copy. Yeah, I have the hardback. I might put a photo on the Instagram so people can see like kind of what it's like, because it's really difficult to describe. But it's so good, and you really do need to read the hard copy for this.
Because you feel like you are actually reading the dossier, whereas I kind of felt like I was just, you know, those like Tumblr text things, like that felt like that for the format. Yeah. So that was unfortunate.
And there are also like lots of little details and stuff that are fun to like spot in the book. And that's really sad, because it's such a fantastic, I really love epistolary novels that are written in like letters and documents and things, one of my favorite sort of constructs for a book. And I thought that this did that so well, but you need to be able to kind of see them in full and not like on a tiny little phone, well, even a big phone screen, they're large now. But like Illuminae is one of my favorite books of the year, for sure. But I think that part of that is just that it's such a different reading experience. So I'm sorry that you didn't get that.
Yeah, I definitely didn't get that. But I did read it all, and it was good. And I highly recommend getting the print version.
Nice.
So moving into the news now, we've got a bunch of stories to get through. We have to say this has been like a somewhat contentious issue on the internet for a while, but recently on Hypebull, the whole Marvel versus DC thing, what do we pay more attention to, what are we the bigger fans of? And I have to say, on defense of Hypebull, like you can't make your staff fans of something they're not fans of. We have a lot of huge Marvel fans on staff, but we do actually also have some huge DC fans that have been representing that side of the fandom. And here on Hype, obviously, we paid a lot of attention to the Civil War trailer. So now it's time to pay a lot of attention to the Batman versus Superman trailer. And we're going to start the news off with that.
Yeah, no, but I think you got the title wrong of it, though. It's Wonder Woman and Her Two Friends trailer.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's really what this is about. So, sorry. That's unfortunate.
Oops, awkward.
Yeah, so we finally got a full trailer, another one. We had a look at the movie after Comic-Con when they revealed the trailer there. But this is the first trailer that's kind of given us a proper look at both of the characters, and we get some more dialogue. We get an amazing shot of Wonder Woman that I will come to in a second. And we also get to meet the kind of villains of the piece. It's weird because they're trying to make it obviously like very epic. You can tell that from the music and just from like the shots that they use and everything. But the response online has been sort of indifferent, I would say. Like, even people who are really big fans of Batman and Superman and Justice League and DC don't seem to be as excited about this, which is, I don't know, kind of interesting to me. I was very, very excited for the Wonder Woman scene because really I'm just here for Wonder Woman. Like, I don't really have an investment in DC. Oh, well, I mean, I'm cool with the Justice League in general, but Wonder Woman's in that. No, I'm here for Wonder Woman. That's what I'm waiting for. And if that means I have to sit through Batman versus Superman, I'm going to. But I don't know, you guys are more casual comic fans. So, like, how did you feel that this compared to, I guess, Civil War or just maybe your expectations for a Batman versus Superman film, if that's like melding these two huge franchises together? Do you feel like it was successful in that?
Yeah, well, Pam, you're a fan of Superman at least, right?
Yes. For me, I think that just because I haven't read any comics, it's still perplexing to me, like, the idea of these two meeting in a movie like this. And I don't know why, because like obviously I know that the Justice League exists and stuff like that, but just it's just a very strange idea. But I'm still intrigued by it. I think that more so now that the trailers are coming out. Yeah, it's kind of hard to explain my thoughts on this. I guess because it serves as kind of like a sequel to Superman. I don't know. For me, I guess I was expecting more of like a standalone Superman type movie and not necessarily like an ensemble cast thing. But I'm interested to see where they take it. I'm trying not to do research on it because I feel like it would be more interesting to go into this without like knowing plot details from what happens in the comics and things like that, since I'm already kind of like in the dark about it.
For me, it's interesting to feel myself how I'm reacting or not reacting to trailers like this, because as you guys know, like, I am a very reluctant comic fan or comic movie fan. I'm a very reluctant Marvel fan because, like, I originally watched Avengers only because of Joss Whedon. Like, that was the reason I watched it, and slightly because of Mark Ruffalo, but that was pretty much it. And I enjoyed it, and I was like, oh, that's a spectacle, it has humor, it's funny, but the superpower thing and the macho wow, you know, brawl, like, that never got to me. And as you guys know, like, the thing that finally hooked me in was like, okay, I was like, here are some characters that I can understand, and here are some characters that actually make sense to me. And because I love TV, because you see development of characters, I was like, oh, there's actually some development from film to film. Like, it's not just an actor donning a suit and striking a pose. And I sort of have felt that way about most superhero movies. So I'm into Marvel now, and I'm still waiting for that to hit with DC, because I feel like when there's that character that unfortunately for me is not Superman, and it can't be Batman because there's a new Batman, but there's Wonder Woman, so I'm like, ooh, because it does intrigue me a lot. But I'm waiting for that personal connection, because if there's not that, then what is this? It's just a movie, and it has I have no connection to it because I have no connection to the characters, and I'm not a comic book fan. So I feel like that's where it feels very generic.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Just it's weird to me the way that people come at DC versus Marvel characters. Like Spider-Man, for example, everyone has Spider-Man fatigue, and yet people are still excited for Spider-Man films. Like, it's
That's surprising to me. Like, to see how much people are excited for him in Civil War, because I felt like I was finally on the public opinion side. I was like, yeah, we're sick of Spider-Man. Yeah. then no, suddenly everyone was like, yay, Spider-Man. I was like, oh, I'm so sick of him.
This is like so a tangent, but the thing about Spider-Man is like the way that I guess Bucky and like Falcon, are they the characters who kind of drew you in?
Yeah, and even Steve and like Natasha. Yeah, so
in the same way that those characters drew you in, like Spider-Man is the number one for so many comic fans. And so like the reason that they're excited is because, you know, he's going home to Marvel, as they keep saying.
Yeah.
They're worried about Sony. But even when Amazing Spider-Man was coming out, like people were still excited about it. Versus like Batman versus Superman, I don't know. I guess because I am less invested in it, I am less critical of it. Like a lot of people really don't like Jesse Eisenberg's take on Lex Luthor, but I thought like he was really good. I really liked him. I thought he was kind of a standout in the trailer. And I don't even think like Ben Affleck is that bad as Batman. I know we're all meant to think like that the Dark Knight trilogy was the greatest thing of all time, but like those movies don't really make sense if you go back and watch them again. So, you know, I'm open to this, but it's not capturing me in the same way that like Marvel things capture me, even when I'm not that interested in them. So maybe it's like the lack of promotion or the lack of hype on Warner Brothers' part. I'm really not sure. It'll be interesting to see like kind of moving forward from here, especially because they showed so many big moments in the trailer that people are a bit concerned, like, why did they show so much? Why aren't they keeping things? Like the Wonder Woman moment would have been a huge moment, and like their meeting, and anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like at least for me, Marvel managed to punch through it's like that superhero fatigue that I was feeling pretty much before the wave even started. But Batman and Superman, not so much. Like it's still, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I could be looking at any movie right now, you know, as a casual viewer. So that's what I'm looking for, that thing that's gonna make me feel like, okay, well, it's worth paying attention to this. But I feel like Wonder Woman is doing that pretty well, because I'm super excited to see her in the movie.
Wonder Woman is queen. Like, she is the best comic book character of all time, probably. Cool. So
great.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let us know what you guys think of the trailer in the comments, and we can discuss it a little bit more next week. And moving on to the next story.
So we finally have a date. This is more exciting, of course, for those of us who either like live on the west coast of the United States than anybody else.
In but the
exactly. So, but since I live in California, this is exciting to me. Okay, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter is opening up in Universal Studios Hollywood, and we finally have a release date—not a release date, but like an opening date for that. And so, this is obviously exciting because I'm like 6 hours away from this, so it's a good time to be alive, you guys. So, Wizarding World in Southern California announced this actually earlier today, which is kind of cool. So we finally have some news that actually like made it into the show when it should have. The official opening date is going to be April 7th of this coming year, and they got Ivana Lynch, who was kind of like, I feel like she's like the theme park ambassador these days, to film this really cute little video with Alan Gilmore, who is the art director for the Harry Potter films. And if you want to take a look at that, it's over on hypeable.com, and she does a little magic to kind of get the Hogwarts castle to light up and let everybody know that Hogwarts is coming to Southern California. And they kind of started teasing this the night before, and everybody in LA was freaking out because there were these beams of light coming from Hogwarts. Everyone's like, what does it mean? So now we know, April 7th,
that's like
where
my
I'll
favorite,
be, you guys.
That's my favorite part of the story, is that just because, you know, Andrew posted a picture on his Facebook and was like, oh my god, the beacons are lit, and like people around LA were like freaking out about it. I was like, that's like, that like never happens anymore, like with marketing and with teasers and stuff, like a real physical, real life teaser. I thought that was really awesome.
Well, the thing is too, is like, especially in LA, it's a big city. So like there's spotlights all the time that are going up into the air. Nobody really gets super excited. It's either like somebody is searching for somebody, so it's bad, or there's like another movie premiere. But it just kind of shows that, like, I mean, and we know this too, especially in the past year, that like the excitement and the buzz and the magic of Harry Potter is still so very much alive. So it's just really exciting to see that happening, you know, more and more these days, because for a while the fandom was really, really quiet, and now there's all this like buzz again. So
yeah,
I feel like with Harry Potter, it's always gonna come back though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's true.
I got really excited just driving down like the highway in LA and seeing Hogwarts in the distance, like off the side. So
I feel like
if this had happened LA, I would lose my mind.
It's funny because I, you know, like, well, when I was out there, I would drive over there all the time, but I would still get excited, you know, like going to like the studios out there, and then you see it off in the distance. And then one day you're with somebody that hasn't seen it yet, and they're like, oh my God, Hogwarts. And you kind of like forget it's there until you round a corner and like, there it is. And so it's just, it's really cool. So
yeah, definitely cool. Yeah. Let's remember that there are areas of the world where they have nothing to do with Harry Potter at all. Because I feel like, you know, Britain's going to have the play and you guys have all the castles and it's great. It's good. I'm excited
for you
guys. So does
Japan, though. This is also, we should say, it's like the third theme park that's open. So They're slowly expanding.
Yes.
I hope for Denmark, Selena.
I will visit, you know, when they open one in like Iceland or like South Africa, I'll be there. You know, it'll be great. But so, I mean, that's exciting and we'll be keeping you guys updated on more stories. Staying with the big fandoms here at the top of the show, we have some Star Wars news. Not that much Star Wars news, but I feel like, you know, we're a week away, about a week away from The Force Awakens. And it's so exciting. So basically, it's just my excuse to be excited about it. The cast and J.J. Abrams have been doing so much press, and the press tour has actually only just begun. So it's going to be ridiculous. And avoiding spoilers is going to be extremely difficult, guys. So I really suggest, like, there's rumors of the plot being online, and there's like people that believe they know who some certain characters are and what like Mark Hamill's role, like where, you know, stuff like that. Like just beware, basically. But we did get a little bit of news that isn't huge, so we can talk a little bit about it, which is J.J. Abrams has now revealed the first two words of the movie. Big spoiler, guys. Very exciting. The movies are This and Will. This will be... No, I don't know what the third word is. He refuses to say. I don't know. This is going to be fun. I'm like already imagining like Rey like in the desert. Like, this will hurt. And then she like pulls out something out of her arm. She's like, ah! Or something like that. It'll be cool.
You don't think it's going to be... like the first actual words, not like spoken the word. Rolling title credits that are so iconic to Star Wars?
No, spoken word.
Spoken word. Okay, this makes a lot more sense.
Yes. The first words of the rolling credits are in a galaxy.
In a.
Far, far away.
Well, you would think, but maybe they'll switch it up on us
this
time.
This will be a galaxy.
This will be a story about... This will blow your mind.
Yes.
If you want Selena Wilkins.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that would be amazing. So yeah, and they, we also know that they won't have a post-credit scene in the movie, so you can safely leave the theater once the credits start rolling, which is exciting to know. As J.J. Abrams says, all the scenes are actual in the movie, so take that, Marvel, I guess. And Jar Jar Binks will not be in the movie. There won't be any Ewoks in the movie, so that should excite most people, unless you are a Hyperbole reader who goes on our Facebook page, apparently. There was, like, this whole rampage of people calling for Jar Jar. I think it was, like, a flash mob of trolls. That was the weirdest thing ever. They also teased some of the actors that might be back for episode 8, but you can read more about that on hyperbole.com. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, well, I guess we get the obligatory DC out of the way. Now I can talk about Civil War, my favorite thing, and the only thing I want to talk about forever. So, look, guys, I'll be honest. This isn't really news, but I just need to find a way to get Civil War into the podcast each week. So, like, expect a lot of these non-news stories. So, basically, after the excitement of the Civil War trailer, we had a new featurette, which has some interviews with the Russo brothers, with some of the cast. We get a little bit of a closer look at some of the characters, particularly Black Panther and Scarlet Witch, which was exciting. But basically, not a lot. Just excitement. Just more excitement. Everything that comes out from, especially the Russo brothers, just seem, I know I've talked about this last time, but are so in touch with like what they want to do and with the characters. And it's just so exciting after Joss Whedon to have a director who's like really just seems to understand what's happening. And, you know, again, I am concerned about the number of people in this film, but like they also seem to be aware of it because they say in the feature, like, this is basically the most people we've ever had in a film and we've made two Avengers movies. So, you know, that self-awareness is a good sign. But basically, yeah, I just wanted to say yay Civil War. And if you guys want to say yay with me, then feel free to participate now.
Yay. You know what strikes me actually about this, that you were just saying, something just occurred to me, what's different or what feels different with relation to Joss Whedon, because you guys know I love Joss Whedon and I'll probably defend most of what he does. But when we were gearing up for Age of Ultron and probably for Avengers 2, the kind of words that Joss Whedon was using to gear us up for the movie were words about the audience and the action. He was like, people are going to love seeing this, or this is going to be huge, and like, this is so exciting, and all of those kinds of words. Whereas whenever the Russos talk about Civil War, they're talking about the characters. Like, they're like, yeah, this is huge for Steve, or like, for Tony, he's going through this thing, or it's like a marked difference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And look, Joss Whedon, as I spent most of the Buffy episode saying, I love lots of what Joss Whedon has done, but I just don't like him in the MCU. And I think that's really interesting that you bring that up, because like, we had an interview recently with Scarlett Johansson about playing Natasha, and like, the way that they all talk about the film is to kind of talk about their character and what's changing for their character. And so I wonder if those are conversations that they've had with the Russos as well, to sort of work out exactly where all of their characters are up to. And I really hope so, because, you know, in something like Age of Ultron, basically the problem with Avengers and with Age of Ultron is that you lost sight of the characters because of the spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, you never got the sense that Joss Whedon had sat down with each of the actors and said, okay, well, like, even if we're not seeing you on screen all the time, like, this is where your character is at. This is what we need to see in those moments.
Exactly. You know? Like, it wasn't so much emotional. It was going for the action and for the funny scenes and for the, like, and the camaraderie, but at a much shallower point. And like, we were saying this earlier, like, how character is really, like, even in these big action films, if you can manage to capture character and if you can make your audience believe that this is organic, you know, actually, ironically, like we were saying, Buffy does so well, taking characters from A to B to C and making that feel real, then you've got a good story. And that sounds like what they're doing in this one.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's even because, like, just between them, they have a more collaborative approach, because, you know, they have to work it out between them. The screenwriters who are working on this are the guys who did Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And did they do First Avenger? And they're also a team, like, it's two guys who work together. So I just wonder if that kind of, you know, influences how they go about it. It's just, like, wild speculation. I have no idea. But, you know, the fact that you kind of need to have those conversations and things, like, or even the fact that there's two people there to, like, keep an eye on the characters, like, surely that helps, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But basically everything that comes out about this just seems great. And there is no way that this movie can meet my expectations. But we'll deal with that when it comes out.
Yes.
For now, lots of excitement.
Right. Well, we'll see how I feel about Star Wars and use that as a good, like, if I'm super disappointed and just crying, then you know. Like...
I'm seeing that next week, did I tell you?
No, you didn't. I'm so excited. Me too.
Yeah, I got my screening, so now I have to go.
Oh, poor you, right? It's horrible for you.
Well, as we know, the only reason I was like, oh, yeah, Star Wars, is because the Civil War trailer is going to play before it. And they're not going to play trailers at the screening, so anyway.
Speaking of trailers...
Yeah, so this is going to excite you if you are a Game of Thrones fan and you've just been like waiting and waiting and waiting for new material for season 6. Unfortunately, though, there's really not much new footage in the first teaser trailer for the upcoming season of this show, but it does kind of send a chill down your spine if you're one of those people that just gets, you know, like, they're, you know, just... Yeah, if you're watching the show and if you're into it, because pretty much it's this cryptic walk down memory lane and it shows all these like really dark and twisted things that have happened, from like Ned Stark's beheading to like Jon Snow's maybe death. We're not sure yet.
So I guess Jon Snow
is not dead.
I know. I know. So yeah, that is up on HighPool.com if you haven't seen it yet. Again, there's not very much to see, but it is very ominous. And I think the coolest part about this is that, like, the right at the end, it says they have no idea what is coming. And it's like, yes, we know, Game of Thrones, you're cryptic, and we don't never know. We're just like Jon Snow. We know nothing. Yes. But thank you for reminding us.
We lost sight of the characters, so it's a little hard to care. Going back to the characters.
Yeah.
Well, if you're still invested, it comes out.
Are you guys invested next year. Too?
I'm still watching it, but it's
that's
like
different
I feel
to
like,
invested.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the thing about Game of Thrones is that, like, I feel like I always get invested for certain parts of the season, and then other parts I kind of, like, not drop out, but I'm not as invested. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not invested when Bran is on screen. He's like watching Frodo and Sam in Return of the King. You're like, when can we fast forward these bits? It's literally, that's what it is.
Well, he wasn't in it for, like, ages. So
I know.
That's true. He wasn't in last season.
That's when I realized...
He's coming back.
Well, that's when I realized that the show had lost me because Bran wasn't in it and I still wasn't enjoying it. And I really thought that he was the problem. Last season kind of lost me, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for Gentry to come back on
my God.
Rowboat. So.
He's never going to come back.
So
he's still out there, still rowing. For Gentry.
Rowing forever.
He's going to come back and he's going to have like no legs and like huge arms because he's just been rowing for years.
Yeah. Like a really long beard.
You know what? He'd still be cute.
Yeah, he would still
have
be cute.
Like little beard and arms the size of his entire body. Yeah. That would be fine.
That's like a
Whatever.
Cartoon waiting to happen. Somebody that's good with art, send us that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we have hype art challenges?
Oh my God. Yes. Please write in with that.
But, you know, I'm going to watch it. Like, I'm still going to watch it when it comes on. I'm just not, like, as invested in it.
Yeah.
But I'll still watch it.
Yeah.
Because, like, 10 episodes, and I can commit to that. Mainly because I have a group of friends and we have Game of Thrones watching parties. So,
that
like,
helps.
It involves effort on my part. And it just, we go and eat lots of, like, good food and drink wine and watch an episode of
and
Game of Thrones.
And that'd be sad if you'd decided to boycott it and you had to sit with your back to the TV. Like, that wouldn't be great.
So.
I know. Yeah. Well, I mean...
Is Jon Snow still alive? Ah, I don't care. Don't tell me.
No, we all love Jon because he's beautiful to look at. It's a very superficial experience, Game of Thrones. Anyway, speaking of nice to look at, Hunger Games. And Finnick. So we have some news from Lionsgate. Surprising no one. They want to make prequels and make money. But I guess surprising some people, the way that they phrased it wasn't that nice. So basically talking about this, Michael Burns, who is Lionsgate's entertainment vice chairman, I don't even know what that means, someone high up, he said in terms of going ahead with future films that would be, you know, prequels or sequels or whatever, he says, quote, "The one thing that kids say they missed from the early Hunger Games films was that there was no arenas." Like talking about Mockingjay, if we went backwards, there would obviously be arenas. So as Andrew has surmised, cool, so kids killing kids. We missed watching that. But, you know, like, hopefully what they're saying is that construct of storytelling was what people missed because of the insights that it offered into, say it with me, character.
Mm.
I don't know. I wrote a whole article about Hunger Games, Lionsgate, and Hunger Games, and what they could do going forward with the franchise. And, you know, I gave some ideas of some prequels that I would genuinely like to see. But the theme park has me worried. Like, the theme park has me really worried that maybe it's not Lionsgate that understands these characters and, like, understands what the Hunger Games is about. It's just the team who made that series. Because the series was done really well, as I've said 8 million times on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But the decisions that Lionsgate is making with it going forward seem to be not fantastic. So I don't know. I don't feel like either of you guys are possibly as invested in this as I am. But, like, you know, what do you think about the prequels, sequels? Good, bad phrasing, terrible idea?
I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like my biggest caveat, which is probably a lot of people's, is whether or not Suzanne Collins is going to be involved, because she's very publicly stated that she's done. You know, she's moving on from this world, whether or not the movie people are. So I feel like any prequels movies that they do would be without her involvement, which would be upsetting to me. At the same time, I'm not going to lie, I think they're right in some ways. Like, I know, I get what Andrew's saying, kids killing kids, but there's a reason why the Hunger Games took off. And I feel like the whole appeal of the Hunger Games is seeing how a character like Katniss deals with these horrible things that is happening around her. And obviously the games are a twisted, horrible thing, but they are a big, they are the Hunger Games. They are the story. So when Lionsgate is saying, well, we can't have more Hunger Games movies without actually including the games, I think that's exactly what they mean, is that if you're going to set any stories in this world and if you're going to make a story worth telling in Pan Am, you have to put it into the context of another Hunger Games. And I think, again, as we talked about in the Hunger Games special, a movie about Phoenix Games or Haymitch's Games or Johanna's Games.
I guess my question is, you know, if the only purpose, which is what it sounds like from what they're saying, is the only films we would make going forward are films that have a game in them, like films that are based around a game. Like, how many of those can we watch before it's no longer impactful in the same way? Like, the reason that Catching Fire works compared to Hunger Games is because it's a totally different type of game. And you realize by the end of it, like, actually, it wasn't about the game at all. It was about all this stuff that was happening, you know, behind. Mm-hmm. Like, if we watch, say, Phoenix Games, and then we watch Johanna's Games, and then we watch Haymitch's Games, like, yes, we're invested in the character, but if that's all that's happening and you don't see any, like, for example, in the article I wrote, I said, I would love a Finnick trilogy that started with his games. And then, like, we saw the repercussions of those for him. I do agree. Like, I am not that interested in this unless Suzanne Collins is involved in it. Like, because I want to know that the Finnick story that I'm seeing is canon, like, is the story that she envisioned for him. You know, it's not like taking the plot points that she created and then kind of building around them, which might be very satisfactory, but isn't right. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I would watch it and then go like, this just feels like very expensive fan fiction. I don't know. So I guess that'll be an interesting thing to navigate from them moving forward. But like, we still know nothing about this except that Lionsgate want to do it, which is kind of what we knew before, just with some extra poor phrasing. So yeah.
Yeah, and speaking about things that might as well be fan fiction, but this is probably a little bit more immersive, is the Telltale Games that brought us games about Game of Thrones and Walking Dead are jumping into the Batman world of Gotham and planning an episodic choice-based game set in that world. It sounds like it's gonna actually follow Bruce Wayne. The other Telltale games have sort of taken new characters and placed them into the world and have them interact with main characters. But one of the makers of the game, Kevin Bruner, said in the press release, this iteration of Batman will give fans a first-hand opportunity to dive deeper into the complex life and mind of Bruce Wayne. So this should be so much fun. I played some of the Game of Thrones game. I kind of fell off it a little bit. I don't know if you guys have experience with the Telltale games, but going like choice-based games are always going to be fun because the choices you make actually have repercussions for your characters later on in the story. And getting to experience Gotham and all of the, there's so many characters that you can interact with and have adventures with, that this is a great new move for them. Do you guys have any thoughts? Or
I haven't played the games. I'm not really a gaming person unless it's the first Harry Potter game on like PC. That's probably the last computer game I played. Like
Filippendo.
Yeah, Filippendo. Like the three ways that he can say it. Filippendo. That's the three.
Yes.
I'm well versed in the Harry Potter game. Yeah, I like, so it's like for a computer or it's like an app? How does it work?
Yeah, it's like for a computer and consoles and phone and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that sounds like, you know, I mean, Batman, I guess I wonder, like, how many choices Bruce Wayne will have if you're just playing as him. Like, is it just, are you going to punch this guy or karate chop this guy? Like, I don't know.
Well, maybe you're like Robin or like his Alfred or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I don't know, because his story is like pretty established, but like, whatever. Is it to tie in with the film? Is that the point, or it's a separate thing?
I don't think
so.
I think it's a separate thing. But, like, the thing about it is, like, you choose, I know, but you choose actions. So, like, you might be, if you are Bruce Wayne, like, you might be walking, like, down an alley and you see, like, an informant and you're like, are you going to say to him, please tell me what you know? Are you going to punch him in the face? Or are you going to stay silent and see if he gives any information willingly and stuff like that? So it's, like, tactical. It's, like, what would you do to get this dude to do what you want him to do, you know?
No, that's cool. I feel like Batman is kind of a good character to apply to that conceit. Yeah. So that could work really well.
Should be fun. And one of our final stories, we have a couple of music things to tie us out, to play us out.
That's better. I like that. Yeah. So everybody knows that the Super Bowl isn't about football. It's actually about the halftime show. And now we know who's going to be performing at this year's halftime show. It's going to be Coldplay, which is fitting not only because they just released their latest album, A Head Full of Dreams, but also because the band will be celebrating their 20th anniversary. And like, it's crazy to think that they've been around that long. At least it is crazy for me. So that's going to take place on Sunday, February 7th at the Levi Stadium in Santa Clara up in Northern California. And they've got some big shoes to fill because Katy Perry and Missy Elliott kind of blew it out of the park last year. Bruno Mars did a good job the year before that. So I'm expecting good things. But also, I have seen Coldplay live in concert and they put on a really, really great show. Like, I know a lot of people... they always think it's weird when I say that if they haven't like experienced it, but they actually do really well in like a big arena setting. So it should be a lot of fun. And if you guys haven't checked out their latest album, it's really, really, really solid and cohesive. And I highly recommend you go do that.
Great. And just our final story is also a music story. Hey guys, what's better than a pop song? How about all the pop songs?
All the pop songs.
So this is actually really cool. DJ Earworm has released their yearly United States of Pop mix, which is a mashup of all the biggest hits of this year. It's 50 songs. And I love the fact that I saw this, Andrew wrote this up, and I didn't know. Like, it's one of those things you find and you don't know how huge they are and like how like the people you know also know about it. I thought it was just like some small thing that I had found randomly on YouTube. So I was like, oh my God, it's a thing. And so, yeah, I listen to them every year and I love them. And this one is no exception. Have you guys heard it?
Yeah, I'm not as into them. But I love them. You know, it really depends. Like, some years I really like them and some years I don't. Yeah. And I don't even think it's to do with which songs are in it. It's just kind of like
the way they choose to
mash them up. I quite like this one. I don't think it's like my favorite one, but it's so clever how they do it, regardless of, you know, how you feel about it. But, it's a good kind of song to like put up and get going and... like add it to your gym playlist perhaps. And
mashups are my favorite thing. Like, I don't know, like they're much better than like the real thing sometimes, because like you never stop, like the hype never stops appropriately.
I love mashups too.
And as well, lots of these songs, like I would never listen to them on their own, or I would never like think they were good on their own, but mash them up and add another beat to them and sort of do that, like only a little bit of snippet of the song, like the most iconic bit, I'm like, I'm there, and then it's like the most iconic pick up all the songs, and I just think that's like, there's nothing not to like. It's you're right, it's not my favorite they've ever done, but I certainly appreciate it for what it is. And it's like, it comes to the point too where, because there are some big artists I guess that I just don't listen to, because I'm not going to name them because I don't try not to talk about things I don't like, but in the context of the mashups, like I'll totally listen to them, but then I'll think their songs are like in the mashup, so I'll hear the real one, I'll be like, what? That's so like slow or lame or whatever. So, and I love, you know, dancing, and it's a good song. You guys should check it out.
I always have the moments where like I feel embarrassed because I don't know like half the songs that they're putting in it, and I'm like, are these some indie hits? Like, what's this? And then my friend will be like, no, it's like the biggest song of the year, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I just am not familiar with it in this tempo. That's what was throwing me off.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Because like, same, I don't know. Yeah. I miss out on so many things. But it's always a fun thing that they do. I like that they do them every year.
Yeah. And now that's the end of the news. Thank you for sticking with us for this long. Now we're going to move into TV show of the week. And we'll kick off. It's funny because Kyle isn't here this week, but we're going to be talking about one of his favorite shows, which is Doctor Who, because not only have I been slugging through the season to catch up, but Merima, you surprised the world and actually watched the final episode.
Yeah, so I haven't watched any of the others, but I watched the finale because I saw people tweeting about it and I was like, I want to get in on this. Like, I want to know what's happening, which I do.
Do you now know what's happening? Because I have no idea what's happening.
No, so it's interesting. You know, I actually thought it was quite a good episode, but that's because I didn't realize that these things happened several weeks ago. Spoiler alert, I guess, if you haven't watched this episode, just skip ahead a few minutes, that Clara died during the season. Like, I knew that the actress was leaving, but I just sort of didn't realize that she had died. And then I guess she came back to life in this episode. And so people were not happy about that. Oh. Like, someone on Twitter, a friend of mine, was saying, like, I was like, well, I thought it was really good. And he was like, well, I guess if you haven't been watching, then you wouldn't be annoyed that Clara was dead and now is suddenly alive again. And I was like, true. Because I was like, oh, this is, you know, kind of interesting. And I thought it was a fun send-off. I just really liked the construct of the episode where it starts off with you thinking that he's like talking to her and she doesn't know who he is. And you're like, oh, I wonder how like this has worked out. And by the end, you realize that actually she is the one who is in control and he doesn't know who she is. And I thought like that was interesting. And I really liked Maisie Williams' character, even though I saw her
she
for like
good
2 minutes.
One, yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back and watch her episodes.
She
like,
changes a lot from each one. Like she does such a good job. She's a really good actor. Like she does a good thing. Like every time period we see her in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what her character is. Like, I have no idea. But I really liked her in this, so that was good. But I don't know. The whole Gallifrey thing, I still think that that was a mistake to, like, bring that back. And I'm hoping that this means, like, this is kind of the end of seeing Gallifrey for now. But we'll see.
Let down after all that build-up. That's, like, with the whole episode, him being in that prison for all those years and all that stuff. Like,
yeah, I didn't see that one.
Okay, well, that was the first part of the finale, and I feel like all that kind of stuff was relatively interesting. I'm just, like, I was over Clara the moment they got her out of the Dalek. Like, I feel like she has never been interesting. Like, it's kind of like, again, with setting up stuff that doesn't pay off. Like, if they keep setting up Clara mysteries and not paying them off, like, how are they expecting us to keep caring about the character? And I feel like this is the same thing. Like, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the episode where Clara died because I'd caught up by that point. And I was saying how excited I was that she was finally gone because, you know, they keep being like, oh, she was shattered through time and she was in all these different places. And I actually thought in the finale, I was like, oh, so we're seeing like another version of Clara. Like this is finally like reminding us that there are other versions of Clara out there and tying back to that storyline. But nope. Just Clara.
Yeah.
And I was like, but then nothing mattered, you know? It was all pointless. And as well, the fact that they can't just have the balls to kill her off. Like, as weird as her death was, at least it was, like, a solid death. And then they, like, almost took that away from us. And for, like, maybe younger viewers watching, it was like, sometimes, like, it's okay to kill off a character. Like, you don't have to immediately try to reverse it. And they left her in this, like, in-between space and sent her off on this, like, ambiguous adventure. But we're not going to see her again, probably. So what's the point of that? Like, why couldn't they just kill her off and tie off the storyline? Like, why keep bringing her back and keep... I don't know. I felt like it was very, very inconsistent.
Yeah, I have to say, like, the reason that I liked this episode was obviously because I saw it as kind of a standalone. Like, I didn't see the first part of the finale. I haven't watched this season. I didn't watch last season. I didn't watch the season before that. I really loved Clara's introduction, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but I really loved her introduction in Asylum of the Daleks. I thought it was one of the strongest introductions for a companion. But I agree, like, once they decided to do that splitting her up to explain it, episode or like that was in the
finale, right?
Yeah, like when they did that, I was like, okay, well now it doesn't really make sense to like have her anymore because every time we see her, like, shouldn't that be another version of her?
Exactly.
Like, she put herself through his whole timeline that includes a future, so it doesn't like make any sense. But if I don't think about that because I just choose to be like, well, I haven't watched any of this and I'm therefore not invested at all, I was like, oh, well, I thought, like, you know, as a good, I don't know, one-off episode, I was like, oh, that was quite good. But I do think that Stephen Moffat has so many problems, and one of those problems is, like, he's not willing to let anything go. You know, it's the same reason that we always see the Weeping Angels come back. It's the same reason that River is there all the time. Like, he just has to keep bringing people back, and that is definitely a flaw, I think. And, you know, if you're watching this season, I can totally understand why you would feel the way you do, Selena, that like they killed her off and then they were like, no, just kidding, she's back again, which is like what they've done. And it's why her character is so like unsatisfying to watch. Yeah. It's nothing to do with Jenna Coleman. I think she's really great. But like the writing for her just makes no sense. Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. There's a Christmas special coming up. We'll probably talk a little bit about that too. So a brand new show that Pam is just discovering...
my favorite show.
Oh my god, you guys, it's so bad. I meant to watch one of these episodes only because it was on in the background, and I'm like almost done with season two, and it's
are not you
even yes. I'm so ashamed. Okay, so I've been watching Gossip Girl, which has been around forever, and I don't know why I hated on this show so much when it came out. I don't think my body was ready, but I'm ready now, and it's amazing. But like, obviously, it's really shallow, but also it's really good. I'm very torn and conflicted.
It's amazing.
It's like my new obsession right now. I just sit around and watch. It's so bad, you guys. Oh, anyway,
I'm so excited about it.
I'm so jealous you're experiencing it for the first time.
Like, I know, like, the big thing, right?
Yeah. But it's okay. But then you have to watch through it there. And see if it actually makes sense.
And, like,
spoiler alert.
Like, right now I'm just like dying because Chuck and Blair need to be together, but Chuck and Blair are not together, and it like kills my soul slowly every episode when they take one step forward and two steps back. It's like, oh my gosh. Anyway, I'm enjoying that. And also I feel like
Sebastian Stan pops up every once in a while.
Yeah, like, Armie Hammer was in an episode.
Yes. Like, I was about to say they have the greatest roster of guest casting on that show.
And they're doing like a flashback episode right now with Serena's mom, and it's like Brittany Snow and like Kristen Ritter.
That was meant to be a spinoff.
That was their backdoor pilot, but it obviously didn't work out. I would have so watched
me
that show.
Me too.
It's really
such trash.
Also,
they had no doubt on that episode.
I love that it's filmed in New York, because New York is like one of my favorite cities like ever. And it's so funny because I spent like some time there, and like every once in a while something like they'll shoot somewhere, and I'm like, I went there all the time. When Dan gets like a summer internship, he's at this used bookstore, and I used to go there and write after my internship. So I'm like, oh.
See, that's how I feel about Doctor Who in Cardiff. Pretty much everything is Cardiff.
I understand. Anyway, yeah. So if you just put off Gossip Girl like I did, I'm probably the only person on the planet that's never seen the show. But yeah, it's really, really good.
Oh my God.
We'll have to get your thoughts after it ends, because the journey is definitely better than the payoff.
It doesn't matter
with a show like Gossip Girl, you know?
That's true.
The best thing about Gossip Girl is once you've watched it, there's like a world of memes that is open to you that you'll understand that I'm going to send you all of. So get ready.
But you know what? Like, in all seriousness, on the outside, it looks like a really shallow, vapid show. And like, it can be sometimes, but there's like a lot of character growth, or at least there is in the first two seasons.
At least there totally is.
I feel like Gossip Girl gets look, Gossip Girl, much like many other shows, was obviously written without any idea how to finish it. But at the start, it's so good. And
I'm at the peak of like awesome, because it's only season two. So
first seasons are great.
Yeah, but you're right. There's a lot of character development, especially, I think, you know, Blair, clearly the stand-up character of that show. And it's just really, really good. Exciting!
I know.
We'll keep a Gossip Girl
gossip segment.
XOXO. What's happening on the Upper East Side this week?
I love it.
So we're going to finish off now with a little bit of Hot on Hypeable, and then we're going to move into listener feedback, which is our big email special. And when I say big, I do mean that literally. So let's get through Hot on Hypeable, and then we'll round off that.
Yeah, so going back to Doctor Who for a second, we had a fun article this week because Clara was apparently disappearing, or she's disappeared in some manner. Selena yawns. We had a kind of collab article where some staff members shared their favorite episode, and I talked about Asylum of the Daleks, which I maintain is the best episode for Clara, which is a shame because it was the first one. So it's downhill from there. But some other people had their favorites, and so definitely check that out. And then we also had a fantastic article from Selena this week about talk show hosts shoving fan art in actors' faces when they go on their shows. And like, just such a great, like, well-considered article about like fandom and kind of the intrusion into fan space and bullying, because it's very obviously bullying because James Corden recently did this and he was kind of like the kind of nerdy fan person who was meant to be on our side. And we were like, you are the one, like, you know, anyway, such a good article. And like, I just, you know, people are saying, oh, well, if you like put your fan art online, like you open it. No, like putting something online is not asking for people to like belittle it on national television. So like, let's make that.
It's like upsetting the fan talent balance, you know, saying, right. Oh, look how talentless these fans are and how good we are and how they all worship us. And, you know, we can laugh at them before their fanness. And I feel like that's not very nice of them, but it was actually Danya whose outrage prompted this article, because I was in my usual like see it and be like, oh, this kind of sucks, and like ready to move on, and then she was like, how dare they, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll write something up about it.
Anyway, that was really great, so definitely check that out. And then we also have a couple articles, as I mentioned last time, we're sort of starting our like Christmas. So we have our year in review stuff, and then we are starting our articles looking ahead to 2016, which is always a fun time of year. So for our sort of wrapping up 2015, we had an article about some Christmas episodes you can binge watch to get yourself into the holiday spirit, which is a good time. There's a very violent Veronica Mars episode on that list. So, you know, they're not all like super Christmassy, but they're around Christmas, so it's fine. And then looking ahead to 2016, we have all of the fun things that Marvel fans have to look forward to. And don't worry, I know people are like, but you always talk about Marvel. The insider gossip is that there is a DC version coming soon, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, get excited for like Civil War and all the fun stuff that's coming with Marvel, and all of that is on Hyperbole, of course.
I've been reading the Gossip Girl memes and I'm like quietly dying over here.
They're so good.
I can't wait for you guys to send me these. I'm so excited.
Oh my god,
that group text is gonna explode.
Oh my god,
I'd have to send them to Selena anyway in the meantime. It's perfect.
Let's finish recording so I can go watch more Gossip Girl, you guys.
All right, so as I've been saying, listener feedback, the time has come. So someone, potentially the Hypeable Ghost, has been opening our hype emails, so we've like got a backlog of all these great things that people have been writing into us, and I feel like such a hypocrite because every week I'm like, please email us, and then we're like, we get nothing, but we have all these things, so we're going to read them all, and well, not all, but we're going to read most of them, and maybe talk a little bit about them, but we're definitely going to make sure that you guys all hear these amazing things that our listeners have had to say. So we're going to start off with Jewel Gamash. And Pam, if you want to start us off. And some of these, sure. By the way, fandom dreams, you guys are actually sending them in. I am so thankful. Thank you. This one has one.
So Jewel wrote in with her fandom dream. I'm so excited for this, you guys. Yeah. So here goes. I have a fandom dream to share. Last night I dreamt so that my friends and I were really excited because we got the Civil War DVD. We sat down to watch it, and about halfway through, it hit me that this couldn't possibly be Civil War that we were watching because I hadn't seen it in theaters first. This is so sad already. Then I had an existential crisis. How can we be watching this already? It doesn't come out in theaters until May. What have we been watching if it isn't Civil War? And then all of these plot holes woke me up. Ha ha. I also wanted to share a bit about my love for Buffy. I didn't watch Buffy when it originally aired, but I watched the entire show plus Angel on Netflix while I was in college. I was having a hard time finding close friends, so I turned to Buffy. I fell in love with the show because I could see pieces of myself in all of the characters. Having a cast of kick-ass girls gave me role models, and even if it was 15 years after it aired, Buffy still holds up, and I will continue to rewatch it, and I suggest it to all my friends because of that. Thanks for a wonderful podcast.
I love that she said that because, like, every time I move somewhere new and I'm, like, by myself, I go into, like, my empty room because I've moved a lot for school and stuff. Go into my empty room and I, like, sit down on the bed and I put on Buffy, season 4, episode 1, The Freshman, where she goes to college and she's all alone and she doesn't have any friends. And I'm like, if Buffy can do it, I can do it.
Oh. Wow.
And it works. It, like, I reminded that, oh, it's okay to, like, feel sad in a new place and feel like you don't know, like, your place and stuff like that. So I empathize with this email. I get it. Very good. And Merrima, do you want to take the next one?
Sure. This is from Yannick?
Yeah.
Sorry, if I mess that up. This week, after repeatedly trying to avoid the special from a certain podcast, I finally decided to go watch Mockingjay Part 2. And it was great! So many exclamation points. Not only was it a beautiful piece of cinematography, it also felt fully fledged and worthy of its source material. However, I do feel like it had certain caveats, the biggest one being the pace. For me, it wasn't the length of a movie in its entirety, but rather the fact that certain scenes just felt off. After all, did it really need to take that long for the mutts to arrive? Also, and I apologize for this, Marima. Hey, that's me. As much as I admire what Lionsgate has done with Suzanne Collins' trilogy, I just can't help but feel like they blew their chance to top Catching Fire by going the let's split it in two route. Also, on a somewhat unrelated note, I recently had a phantom dream. Oh my God. I can see a trend. Wherein I teamed up with Katniss and Peter. Oh, so it's still a Hunger Games theme. while we were all in the Hunger Games being hunted down by Once Upon a Time's Peter Pan. That is scary. That kid was terrifying. Unfortunately, our plan that mostly consisted of us running for our lives went sour, go figure, when suddenly we found ourselves in the midst of the Forbidden Forest. Being attacked by Aragog and his delightful children. This just gets better and better. Needless to say, I did what any reasonable person would have done and sacrificed myself so J-Law and J-Hutch could escape because, let's face it, who would want to live in a world without them?
Wow.
Oh, well, thank you for your sacrifice. Taking one for the team.
Yeah,
yeah, we appreciate it. Mm. And thanks. Now, I hope you've gone and listened to the hype special, like all of the stuff.
Yeah.
Now that you can do it.
And another email from Andrea Kearns, who says, "Hi guys, longtime listener, love the show. Thanks for having an entire show dedicated to the Mockingjay. Admittedly, I'm probably more obsessed with these stories than the average person, but I want to weigh in for a second on your discussion of the epilogue scene. One of the things that Francis Lawrence seems to love doing in these films is create parallels. If you remember the very first scene in the first movie that Gary Ross directed, Katniss and Gale are sitting in the same meadow. It's there that Katniss declares that she's never going to have children. As long as she lived in a world where they could starve to death or be taken from her and sent to the Hunger Games, she couldn't imagine anything different. In the book Catching Fire, Katniss talks about wanting a world where Peeta's child could be safe. She's not picturing herself in that world because she is determined to die, saving him in the Quarterquell. But by the end of Mockingjay, she's helped create that world and now feels safe enough to share it with Peeta. I think it's so powerful that when you finish the series, she's sitting in the same meadow with Peeta and their children. For practical reasons, Francis had to leave out so many details and nuances of the books, but I think that parallel is worth mentioning. FYI, the kids in that scene are Jennifer Lawrence's own nephews, which explains why Josh has such a great moment with the little boy. He's known Josh his whole life. Aww. Thanks again for a great discussion. Can't believe it's over. Sniffle, sniffle." Yeah, great points. I mean, when you talk about meadow parallels in YA films, my mind just switches off because I'm like, Twilight.
Was that in Twilight?
No, yeah, yeah, that meadow, recurring meadow scene. I was like, oh my God, are they really going to do this?
But with the flowers. Yeah. I know what we're talking about. Sorry.
But these are really good points, and I'm glad that
you
wrote that.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I think, I don't dislike the meadow scene. I just felt like in the movie it just wasn't as good as the book. But, like, great points.
So our final two comments. Were you guys aware that we had a listener both called Shauna and Shauna? Because I feel like I always assumed, sorry, girls, I feel like I always assumed you were the same person.
Oh.
Because your names are so similar.
You guys should be friends.
You should be friends. But actually, yeah, because one of them, Shauna Debusschere, and the other one is Shauna Evans. So I was like, oh, she's going by like two different last names. Like, this is weird. What's going on? But nope. They exist as separate entities. So there you go. You learn something new every day. The first one is Shauna. And Pam, you can read that one.
All right.
We'll give them separate voices.
Shauna says, "Hi, guys. I thought it was about time to finally make use of your email address. A quote from your show. If for some reason you have no interest in Civil War, I'm sorry. I'm probably the only hype listener who couldn't care less about Captain America. It seriously took me at least 2 minutes to remember that Steve is Cap's first name. I guess I'm just suffering from superhero fatigue. I'm a completist, so I want to see everything and in the right order. And right now I'm stuck in the Marvel universe at Iron Man 3.
Oh, God.
So at this point...
Oh, you're not moving on from there.
No.
I know. It's the worst one. Anyway, back to Shauna's email. So at this point, it feels like too much of a chore. One day I'll get back on the track, maybe. P.S. Very excited about Hey Arnold. I still remember watching it when I just learned how to read and how to do my best to read the subtitles before they disappeared. I'm from Belgium. I think Brainy, I just had to Google his name, often showed up in my nightmares as well.
It's kind of a fandom dream.
Anyhow, I just wanted to write to say that I've really been enjoying the show and thank you for making it. Lots of love, Shanna.
Thank you, Shanna. Yeah, I mean, I am proud of this email because I'm kind of like, I felt like I was in the same boat for Marvel for a long time. And I have to say, I never liked the Iron Man films, so I totally feel you. I appreciate him in general, but the films are not my favorite. So get through it, Shanna. You can
watch
do
the
it.
Captain America ones.
Exactly.
Just forget about Iron Man. He's the worst.
And our final email from Shauna.
Is this me?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, I love this. Hey Hypes, Shauna says. Can we make that a thing?
Hypes. Hey Hypes.
I like that.
Sure.
Yeah, Hey Hypes. The Buffy special was amazing to listen to. Buffy is my favorite TV show of all time, one that I completely credit with bringing my husband and I together.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people laugh at me when I insist that it's the greatest show ever made. No one on this podcast, don't worry about it. It's been a long time since I watched it all the way through, so hearing the fact that it truly is the greatest explained at length reminded me of all the great reasons as well as validated my opinions. Thanks for that. The discussion of Angel towards the end of the show was really interesting. Marma said that you can't watch Angel without watching Buffy, and I am proof of the fact that it's not true. I did watch Buffy when it aired, but I watched the first episode of Angel the night that it was on, totally watched it by accident, and I fell head over heels in love with the show. My dad and I watched it religiously and taped every episode as it aired. I watched it completely all the way through before I ever saw a full episode of Buffy.
Wow.
My husband is the one who couldn't believe that I watched one without the other. When we met, half of the reason I fell for him was because he watched Angel and I didn't know anyone else who did. Oh, that's so cute. In the first few months of our relationship, he downplayed every episode of Buffy ever and burned them onto disc for me so that I could see it all. Is there greater proof of true love? Anyway, I think your assertion of Buffy, Angel versus Buffy is totally on point. Some Angel episodes, particularly in season 2 and 3, are better than Buffy ever was, but season 4 was horribly awful. The thing is that 5 started to pick back up and then the show got cancelled. With the exception of Cordelia, I don't think that too many of the other characters had a chance to end organically because the show was cancelled halfway through the season. Yes, it got to finish out its last season, but it definitely felt rushed. I wish the last episode had been longer than an hour. It was crushingly sad for me. I remember sitting in front of the TV watching, getting excited as Angel's crew headed into battle, only to have the rug pulled out from me as the episode entered. I think watching both on Rewatchable will be great, although quite time consuming. Yes. Keep up the greatness, Shauna.
Thank you. And yes, our schedule, I think if we stick to it, means we'll be done in the summer of 2017. So we're trying to keep it as short as possible. Thank you so much for everyone who emailed in. And if you want to talk to us via email, and we'll respond to you too on email like we've been doing. Yeah, just because sometimes it's easier to respond on, you know, via email than on the show, but we do want to read some of them aloud in the show because they are usually really good and full of fun information and or fandom dreams. So you can email us at hype@hypeable.com. You can of course also find us on hypeable.com, hypable.com. And you can find us on Twitter at HyperbleHype. And one tweet that I just really quickly want to read because I said I told her I would is Ashley at Riku Stark, who says, I finished Hype's Buffy special and I was wondering how you felt about the comics, mostly because the season 8 comics and beyond. We actually did have a discussion about that on the podcast, but I had to cut it for time because we ran long. Spoiler alert. But I am not a huge fan. I think Natalie quite likes them. I feel like they're weird.
I've read some, and then I kind of got put off. I didn't really like the direction that they went with a lot of the characters. And I think, you know, a large part of Buffy was also the actors. So the fact that I wasn't getting that, like, made it less enjoyable for me. And also, what happens with Xander in the comics is so bad. I'm going to rage about it here because Selena cut it out of the show.
I did cut it out of the other one.
It is so gross and bad and like, just grosses me out. It's really creepy. I really did not like that. So
I feel like people really
like them.
People do, and that's fine. But like, I feel like, you know, we going back to character for like the millionth time, like Buffy is great because the characters are consistent and their choices make sense. And then you put them into a comics universe where, you know, development is much more fluid and you sort of go from one extreme to the next very quickly, and it just doesn't fit. For me, it just doesn't feel like Buffy. So
yeah.
It's the whole fanfic thing. Like, when does it stop being canon? When does it start just being,
right,
you know, AU stuff that yeah. could happen?
In general, I'm not really into like comic book continuations of TV shows. Mm. Like, they have the Firefly ones as well, and yeah. I've never really been into those. So it's just like a personal choice.
Yeah. So we got actually some more feedback, but this is all we have time for because there was so much. And but thank you so much for sending that in, and please continue to do that. Next week we'll have our Star Wars special, and you can send in your thoughts on all the latest news. And thank you so much for listening. Until next time, my name is Selena.
My name is Pamela.
And I'm Arma.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Very shrill.
Shrill.